It is now 3:32, so I think we'll get started. I am going to mute everybody's line and then open it up in a bit for questions. So I'll go ahead and do that now, and just so everybody knows, we are recording this call.
All right. So shall I start with a brief review of...
All guests have been muted.
So, Gigi, are you there?
I am here. So,
David's there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, so let me just kind of frame up our call here. This is a little different than what we've done in the past. We're going to spend about 45 minutes on the usual report out on the BU Endowment Fund performance and socially responsible investment activities. And we'll have a few minutes for our questions, but then we're going to turn it over to Bill Murray,
senior
counselor, to talk a little bit about how we have changed the system for investors to get access to their accounts online, and why we did that, and what benefits that provides you, and also answer any questions about that. And we have allowed more time because of that, so we'll go up to an hour and a half.
So we'll just
play that by ear and see how questions what we want to do today is review the May performance, talk about outlook and expectations, talk about what came out of our investment committee,
hear from David
about anything socially responsible investment.
So with that,
let me turn it over to Lucia Santini. Lucia is incoming chair of our investment committee. We're really grateful to have her with us today. So, Lucia, why don't you
Okay, sure. So, May, relative to really the first quarter of the year, was somewhat subdued both domestically and globally as returns were negative internationally and they had been strong both in emerging markets and in developed markets during the first quarter of the year, so that on a year-to-date basis the markets are, you know, up anywhere from 5 to 7% generally speaking. But for the most recent month, the foreign markets were down between about 1.5% and 4%, depending on whether you were in developed or emerging markets. The domestic front was a little bit more positive, up about 1.5% on the large cap side to closer to 4 on the small cap side, but on a year-to-date basis, large cap stocks are trailing foreign markets for the first time in quite some time, and small cap and mid-cap strategies are still ahead of large cap on a year-to-date basis. So we are performing in line with our allocation and benchmarks, and I'm happy to answer any questions that people might have about recent performance, and then I can move on to talking a little bit more about outlook and expectations. Tim, is it relatively easy for you to unmute people if they have questions?
Yes.
It is. I will do that right now.
Okay.
All guests have been unmuted.
So if anyone has any questions at all about recent investment performance, I'm happy to answer those questions, and I neglected to say in my introductory remarks, and indeed they're focused on recent investment performance, but I guess I would emphasize that the long-term returns of the portfolio continue to be very consistent with our goals and expectations, and indeed, as long-term investors, our investment policy and guidelines are designed to achieve attractive long-term performance. And while we monitor and report on investment performance in the short term, our goals are definitively long-term goals.
It's very noisy. So I'm going to actually mute everybody, but set it up so with star six you can ask your question.
Okay, so it was so noisy, in fact, Tim, that I wasn't able to hear.
All guests have been muted. You can unmute your line by pressing star six.
Okay, great. So one at a time, people can unmute themselves.
Yes, so if you press star six, it will unmute your phone and you can ask a question of what you got.
Okay, great. Thanks, Tim. It was a little bit hard to hear.
Yeah, so star six to ask a question.
Okay, and if there are no questions at this immediate point, I am happy to move on to our longer-term outlook and expectations. And we talked about this, I think, in our
hello?
Last call. Oh, hello. Hello.
Yes, I have a question. I'm looking at the PowerPoint pages that you sent this morning, and I was wondering when you make your comments, could you please refer to which page you're on so I know what we're looking at?
Oh,
I would
sure.
appreciate that. Thank you.
And I apologize. I was looking at the page entitled 3 at the top of the page. It was, I believe it was the first page after the agenda. And it's entitled Unitarian Universalist Association Composite Net Performance Summary as of May 31, 2015. And so it was really that pages 3 and 4 that are looking at each of the categories, the domestic, international, fixed income, the tactical asset allocation, hedge fund, and private market. Those pages would report the one-month performance as well as the long-term.
Okay. And you were talking about large cap and small cap numbers. Is that a particular line, or is that just an overview comment of yours?
So it is an overview comment of mine, but if you want to see it reflected in the domestic equity composite section, if you look at Russell 3000,
uh-huh.
that line would represent the large cap.
Okay.
And Russell, the 1000. Value and growth. Really the Russell 2000 growth down there at the bottom is small cap, and the growth in those are. So let me just correct that. Russell 3000 is the entire market, but because the market is heavily weighted towards large cap, Russell 3000 tends to really reflect the performance of large cap companies.
Okay.
The 1,000 value and growth represent the largest value and growth companies. And then
the 2,000. You can unmute me now. Mute me again. I appreciate your comment. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, just do star six, and that will mute you. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. And so in each of those panels, you can see the benchmarks as well as the actual investment managers that are part of the endowment management structure, and each of those managers is described in detail at the end of the materials, so that, for example, you see just above the Russell 2000 growth line, you can see Peer Capital, and if you wanted to read about them, they are in the supplemental information section in the back. Okay, all of the managers are usually in the information in the back. Yep, and they are here too. All right, any other questions? So then just very briefly on outlook and expectations. As we've discussed previously, the economic outlook is a fairly muted one. There are no strong growth expectations really anywhere across the globe relative to what we've seen, you know, maybe 2, 4, 5 years ago. So there has been some good growth coming out of the recession, the Great Recession as it's called, but growth in the U.S. Continues to be reasonable, but certainly not strong. Or risking inflation as we've seen recently as yesterday. The Fed is still not announcing any increases in interest rates, which means that they remain a little bit concerned about the level of unemployment and sort of the stability of the growth path, I think, given some of the risks that continue in Europe and also obviously risks in the Middle East. So our outlook remains positive, but with expectations for lower growth and therefore likely lower returns from the markets. Obviously, the U.S. equity market has been returning very strong double-digit numbers, and that is not likely to continue. And I think people are hopeful that that Europe will return to positive growth, but no one is expecting anything spectacular there. So muted expectations, and the portfolio is well positioned to participate in growth, but with both deflation hedges as well as some modest inflation hedges. So we believe that the portfolio is well positioned for the current less than exciting outlook for global growth and financial market returns. So I'll pause there and see if anybody wishes to unmute and have any questions or comments about where we are.
Again, star 6 to unmute your phone, and then star 6 again to mute it. If anybody has a question.
Okay. And then very recently, just last week, we had an investment committee meeting, and I think the highlights of that meeting, in addition to the normal due diligence reviews of individual manager performance and any any changes that were going on within organizations. We did finalize the new asset allocation targets and ranges, which had been discussed and agreed to, but not formalized in writing and not put to a formal vote. Those are in your materials. I'm just trying to see. So,
page 8.
Okay, yes. It's page 8. Thank you, Tim. This is actually the page from the June meeting materials, and so you'll note at the bottom there, it reflects the market values of investments as of March 31 and not May 31. Obviously, the markets are always moving, and our investment program is dynamic. So cash flows are being made into and out of funds and so forth. So just to clarify that this is as of March 31 that that we were making these allocations and thinking about them really relative to where we have been. And so you can see, looking on the left-hand side, there were very modest tweaks made to the top panel entitled Public Equity, where the public equity target commitment has moved to 44% on the right from 42% on the left, and the range has just shifted modestly upward. And you can see that modest upward shift was spread really across all of the asset classes, with the international developed markets being tweaked downward and the other ones being tweaked upward. But the more significant changes in the target commitments and the ranges are those that occurred in the bottom portion of this schematic, which is the focus within the fixed income side of the portfolio, having the target commitment reduced to 20% from 28%, and the range alongside that shifting downward, and also with the shift in alternative investments, which on the left-hand side, we're playing with nomenclatures just a little bit here, shifting from being called flexible investments to alternative investments. I think the most noticeable change that you'll see there is that global asset allocation managers being reduced from 25% to 10%. The difference there being moved into what's called risk parity and hedge funds and private markets. And so the endowment already had hedge funds of approximately 5%, we will be looking at alternatives in that space over time, making an allocation to private markets. In that space, there are many, many, many different kinds of investment opportunities that present themselves. Some of them might be opportunistic, which was a category that we were actively stating before, which is now essentially recognized as coming underneath some of these categories, hedge funds and private markets. So I will stop there and ask if folks have questions about the changes in the targets and ranges that are outlined on these two pages.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
May I ask a question about...
Could you tell me what is risk parity, please?
Hello?
Yes. So, well, risk parity can be a variety of different strategies, and indeed some risk parity strategies can fall into the hedge fund category, but they are approaches designed to produce a return that is an attractive long-term return with a lower level of volatility than you might expect from many hedge fund approaches, which can be very leveraged. So hedge funds generally do imply leverage, and yet there are some risk parity strategies that present themselves as hedge funds. So some of these categories can get confusing, but it is a category that's designed to produce an attractive return with a lower than normal risk through a variety of risk management techniques.
Yeah, and this is Tim. I'll just add that the fund that is in that category is Bridgewater. So if you go back to that list of that shows the returns of all of our managers, it's the Bridgewater All-Weather Fund, which is the risk parity fund, and that has actually been in the portfolio for at least 8 years. So this is not new. It's just making it a little more transparent.
Yes, it is making it more transparent, and I actually think that I was on the committee the first time when that was selected.
Okay, so it's more like 10 years ago then.
Yes, I believe it is 10 years, and indeed I think it was reflected as a hedge fund initially, but it shows you that some of the nomenclatures really don't... aren't really that helpful in understanding, because hedge funds typically have a lot of leverage, and this fund is really designed to have a lower level of risk and more consistent returns.
I have a question about the cash category. Hello?
Sure.
Okay. I see that it's 0 to 10% cash, and I would assume this is what's held for congregation who are requesting their parts of their endowment funds. Do the individual money managers in the other categories have the ability to put some of their funds in cash when it's warranted and to leave them there during a market questionable time or downturn, or do they have to be fully invested at all times?
So the one that has the most, so the quick answer is they have flexibility to use cash.
Mm-hmm.
The degree to which they have flexibility depends on their specific role in the portfolio and their benchmark and their agreement with the association, but they do have the flexibility to use cash. So the one that has the most flexibility is the global asset allocation category.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
But others do as well. At some points in time, your fixed income manager might have more cash, and at some points in time, your public equities manager might have more in cash.
Surely.
But it would really depend on each specific manager and benchmark what what their maximum cash allocation would be, because indeed they're filling a role in the portfolio. So
yes, and that would be outside of the 0 to 10% cash category. Is that correct?
Well, that would be in addition to it, but
I think it's
in your materials, and Tim, you might have to help me find it again. But I think that we included the look-through analysis because the committee does routinely do a look-through analysis, so we
that's
can
on
pa- see.
That's on page five.
Thank you.
So that
yeah, so
says, again, this is pulled out of our quarterly book to the committee. So it says 2 at the bottom of it, but it's the fifth slide in the deck. It shows that look through.
This is page 5?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
The one thing I would add to that is that the 0 to 10% allocation is considered for kind of routine allocation, but the committee itself does retain the right to move whatever they think is prudent to cash if there were a situation where they felt that we would be better off with 25 or 50% in cash. The committee has the authority to do that.
That's
in
absolutely
extraordinary,
true.
In an extraordinary situation, they could do that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tim.
I have a question relative to what is included in private markets. Is that the same as real assets?
So that's private equity. So that's investments in so it can be real assets, but it isn't necessarily, because it could be an investment in an early stage clean energy company, for example. So it's just anything in the private equity space.
Yeah, and I'd just say it's beyond that. Actually, it could be private debt. It could be private real estate.
True.
But it's not traded on public markets. It's a private investment.
Understand. Thank you.
And tends to be much less liquid. So that's why we have limited it to a fairly small percentage of the portfolio because of the liquidity. But it does, we believe, provide an opportunity for higher returns than what one gets in the public market. Okay, so Lucia, did you have more you wanted to?
No,
address?
Nope.
Okay, I'm not hearing more questions right now. So maybe we could move to David. David, did you want to give a report from the Socially Responsible Investing Committee? And I don't know if not to put you on the spot, but
sure.
If you wanted to say anything about how the committee is addressing the business resolution from last year.
Yes. So most specifically with regard to General Assembly, we're reporting back what's gone on during the past year to General Assembly. So there's more to it than I can briefly articulate here, but certainly I would encourage anyone who's curious about the precise responses that we're doing to go to basically there's the reporting session, which I believe is Thursday, I want to say at 1 o'clock. And then there's 1:15, yes. And then on Friday at 4:45, there's also the SRI reporting that will happen just to feature our partners and that sort of thing at the General Assembly. Other than that, we've also, I could talk about a few things that we've done and a few things that we're kind of encouraged about as well.
I'm on mute.
We're very encouraged, of course, by the Hopes and Cyclical and what we think is going to shake loose on that, as well as the fact that quite a few major European oil companies have started advocating for a carbon tax. We believe that that will create an opportunity for us to do additional advocacy with the major oil companies in the United States and other energy-related companies in the United States. We'll be working alongside ICCR, basically our umbrella organization that we work with on that on those issues. We have a new. We're considering a new process for our screening, which is to say that in the past we've used a combination of controversies and worst-in-class companies to screen out who we consider to be poor corporate actors. We have found that in a lot of cases, companies that companies that have often have kind of a good reputation and a higher in-class rating can sometimes slip through, I guess you could say, in the sense that they'll have a controversy that is creating sort of a problem, but because they have higher than peer group positioning, they aren't screened out. And so we've been considering ways to tighten up our screening. And by what we're strongly considering right now is focusing simply on the controversies and using a new tool that has become available to us from Sustainalytics, our consultant, that tells us what the outlook for that particular controversy is. If the outlook is that it's getting better, the company is addressing it, then it's something that we can more or less leave alone. And if it's something that they're not addressing or that they're actively making worse, then it allows us to screen that company out. So we haven't actually implemented that change yet, but that is something that we're looking to do. Another item is community investing. We just informed a couple of community investing CDFIs, which are community development financial institutions, that we would like to invest in them. The two total of the two investments is $175,000, which we have been waiting to do in Portland in concert with GA. Aside from that, I think that's probably all the major points that come to mind. With regard to SRI.
Come on
great.
In, Phil.
Thank you, David.
You're welcome.
I think the we want to get to this presentation on the new interface for investors in the common endowment. But before we do that, let me just give one more chance here for questions for either David or Lucia or me. So star 6 if you want to open up your line and ask a question.
This is Joan Cuddy. I'm curious what the two community investments will be.
Just a second, and I will pull them up. Assuming that all goes well with them, I think there's still some interim steps to be taken. I can give you those two names momentarily.
Maybe your idea was to do something West Coast or Northwest?
They're both in Portland.
Right, yeah. They're both Portland. In Portland. Point West Credit Union is the first, and the second, that would be a $100,000 investment, and the second is Innovative Changes for a $75,000 investment.
Thank you. Have any of these matching local congregational? How are the congregations asking for matches these days?
We love to get requests for matches. I'm not sure of how many have asked lately. These are not in response to an ask from a local congregation, but are instead of, as the portfolio has grown, we've added additional cash to that particular allocation.
Okay,
so,
thanks.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Joan. Joan is a former chair of the SRI committee, so it's always good to hear from you, Joan.
Thanks.
Okay, so Bill, are you on?
I am. No, you're not. Did you call in using the wrong code?
I am in, Tim.
Okay. Hey, Phil. So, Phil, as I said at the top of the call, Phil is our senior endowment and has been working very hard to implement a new system to provide better services to our congregations. It requires a few steps on your part. So, Phil, why don't I turn it over to you? And is this, are you going to be speaking from some of the slide deck here? Let's get folks to the right page.
Right. The slides begin on page 25, but before we get started there, let me just give you a little background as to why the change, because the change hopefully has impacted more myself and
the
UUA staff who services the common endowment than our clients, our congregations and affiliates who have placed their trust in the pool fund. We did the change primarily because the benefits that will accrue to the congregations will be evident when you go onto your online environment. Primarily, there is historical data out there now for congregations that go back to April 1st, 2009, if you've been with us that long. The statements that are available besides what I would say is the more familiar monthly and year-to-date statements. There is also, for accountants who are familiar with accounting, there is a real balance sheet. There's a real income statement.
Ah.
So these statements also, when you bring them up in your online environment, you can drill down. So there will be a line that says investment income. You drill down into that, and it actually shows you all the historical data there. The statement itself that shows on the online account is always for the current fiscal year. The common endowment's fiscal year is June 30th, so that might be a little different than your congregation's fiscal year end. But the common endowment is June 30th, but if you drill down, you can see all the historical information for any one of those lines.
Phil, when you say drill down, how do you do that?
You just click on the line. It will say, like, investment income. And what you will do is, this gets in, I wish we could do an interactive presentation, but for those of you who have been on your online site, when you go into reports, there are three sections that you can go into. There's something called income statement, balance sheet, and historical statements. The historical statements present static looks of data as of a month-end date.
Yeah, I reckon.
And we have out there, the first statement that we put out there for this new online environment was February, which is when we went live with the system. As long as we have room in our database, we'll have as many months of statements out there as we can hold. The other reports that are available is you can click on the income statement, and when you look at the income statement, they've got boldface categories, income, expense, and then under income, there's investment income, realized gains, unrealized gains, and three categories of expenses. You click on, like, investment income, and then another screen shows up, and it shows by month-end date the amount of income or expense for that particular category. And with your mouse, you can highlight that, go right-click, copy, and you can drop it into a spreadsheet. So then you can do whatever you want with that kind of information. So that, if Susan or I, if you get into this and you're confused by it or you need additional assistance, Susan or I will be able to help you on that. So that's really the big benefit. The other thing is, in this investment environment, sometimes where the returns are not as great as they were in the past, every time that we can do anything to minimize or maintain costs will help the performance of the common endowment. Eventually, after we amortize the implementation costs, so in about 4 years, we figure that we'll save almost half the cost that we were incurring previously with the previous provider, which was NRS. And I think on an earlier slide in here, I noticed that NRS was listed as Trust Product Administration. So that, let's see if I find that, it was like a slide that's on page 18. So that reporting category now, NRS Trust Product Administration, really is being provided by our TP Online, this HWA software. What is this HWA company that I referred to? This is a company that's been around for decades. They're based in Memphis, Tennessee. They have a number of significant clients, churches, who use their software. The UUA, though, is a pioneer, and I guess that's only appropriate for our organization to be pioneers in doing something different. We are one of their first TP client who is using only cloud. So we are not hosting the software here at the UUA headquarters. HWA is providing that service for us. And that's also in recognition of our own IT staff here. They don't have hundreds of people. They have handfuls of people. So this the UUA is trying to utilize their resources in the most cost-effective way we can. So with that just kind of overview then, it's really to improve the congregation and affiliates' experience on getting information from the common pool about what their account looks like. As we do weekly updates for cash receipts or distributions, this is how clients can determine, well, did my congregation's deposit get into my account? You'll be able to go online and you can see what the date was that we deposited it to our bank account. If there are no comments or questions about that general introduction, I can begin on page 25.
Do you want to take questions now, Phil, or do you want to wait?
Well, only if they have any questions or concerns about that before we just kind of walk through actually how you sign on to your account.
Okay, so if anybody has a question, you can star 6 and open up your line. Okay, I'm not hearing anything, so why don't you continue, Phil?
Okay, thank you. So on page 25, it's just a brief overview as to how to access your USIP account online. I'm hoping that many of you who are online have already experienced this online environment. On page 26, how do you get there? Well, you can go to the USIP website, click on Reports, and there's forms and sign up for the online statement. So if you have not signed up for an online statement, you just go to that form. And if you have, Susan would have already sent you your password to how do I get to the online environment. Well, there's a further down on that report tab is an online access, which is highlighted on page 27. After you click onto that online access, you come into your login. And this is very typical. There's a username and a password. When you first sign on, Susan will have given you a temporary password, and it will ask you to change that temporary password to whatever password you want to come up with. If you forget that password, we don't have a record of it. So what will happen is Susan will reset your password with another temporary password, and then maybe this second time you'll write your password down somewhere other than on a sticky note that you put on your computer. When you get into your account, the first thing you might notice, maybe the initial time you sign on, is there'll be a page that comes up and talks about the privacy policy, which is basically the UUA's IT policy as to what do we do with our data. We don't do anything with your data, really. Particularly on this USIF, we don't share anything with anybody. Your data is secure. But if you get then into your first screen, it's going to be entitled Accounts. So we're sharing here on this screen shot, page 29. This is just part of the UWA endowment accounts. We've got more than a few accounts. So our account goes on for a few pages. So if you had multiple accounts, you would see all your accounts listed there, and it would show you the current market value. And this is whatever the latest date that the common endowment pool was priced, which is the month-end date. You can click on any one of these accounts, and in this illustration on page 30, you'll notice that we clicked on the Sweetser Family Fund. This shows you at this date, I think these screens will probably go back to February, what the value of this particular common endowment fund was. On page 31, you'd say, well, this looks like it repeats the same thing. This is what will happen here is the pool is the common endowment, the investment managers, and this is their portion of the pool. If the Sweetser Trust had made a cash contribution towards the end of a month and it's not invested until the first of the next month, there will also be a line in here that will show cash. You click on to the USIF pool, and it will show you a recap of all the transactions, historical transactions, and you'll notice here it says page 7 of 7. So in this case, there's 7 pages that you can go through. This is not a great way of seeing how your particular investment has done, which is why we have income statements. The income statement, this is where I was referring to, is by fiscal year, and if you click on investment income, I'm hoping we have a slide. Yep, does not look like we've showed the drill down on this presentation. But if you clicked on investment income, a slide similar to what was shown going back here on page 32 will show up for any particular category within that report. So the income statement is just typical income expense. Net income after distributions, the balance sheet, which is on the next tab, is for your outside accountants. They'll probably get all excited about this because it shows your pooled investment, shows any cash that is not invested at this particular point in time. And then down in the net worth, it'll show cumulatively, and in this case, again, I'll tell you it's from April 1st, 2009, how much in distributions you've taken out, what did you originally put into your fund, which is called the original corpus, plus any additions you've put in since then. The quarterly distributions reinvested in quarterly distributions, this refers to the previous method where we were doing a 13-quarter distribution based on NAV values. As you may recall, effective the beginning of this fiscal year, we're no longer doing distributions based on NAV. We're only doing distributions if congregations want to take a distribution on a recurring quarterly basis. The year-end cumulative close, that basically represents since you've been in this fund, what is your fund gained or lost? In this case, it shows a nice gain. Slide 35 shows what happens when you go to the other report selection, which is historical statements. And in this case, when we did this in February, we were not showing monthly statements, but we had a congregation ask, it said, what happened to my monthly statement? I'd like it. So now, in addition to the fiscal year-end statement, in this case 6/30/2014, you'll see a month statement that's year to date, and then also a statement that just shows the month activity. Slide 36 shows the statement that's available out there. And it's difficult to see it on this slide, but you can download these statements. You can save them. You can print them. It's a PDF type format, so Acrobat will allow you to bring those in. This is the year-to-date statement based on our fiscal year. Shows all the activity. And on page 38, because each congregation is given a username and sign-on, the people who oversee the investment change. So if you want to change the password, a new group of trustees comes on, you can go in here, change your username. That'll prevent people who used to get into your account. They will no longer know what the username is. Same thing on passwords. At any point in time, you can change the password. There are some restrictions. It says it's 5 characters at least. You have to have 1 lowercase, 1 uppercase, at least 1 numeric. And you can't have used this password previously within the last year. And again, that's just for your own security. There's also a help tab at the top. So if you're on any kind of screen, any one of the screens, and you're confused by what's on there, you can click on that help tab, and that'll give you some basic information. In this case, here on screen 40, it shows you what the online help for the change the password is. So that's kind of the basic overview of what happens when you get onto the online environment and what you see. Much different than the previous online, which was a static statement. You had no drill down capabilities. You couldn't drill into historical information. What was out there was the statement, and I believe that was they just were posting monthly statements. There were no quarter statements, fiscal year statements. That was it. So we're hoping that this provides you more information. It's easier to get at. And, I think that's about all I've got to say on that without putting you all to sleep. So any questions regarding just those screens or problems that perhaps you've already experienced getting onto the online environment that you haven't previously shared with Susan or myself?
We have about 5 minutes left, so star 6 if you have a question for Phil.
How about the change in market value that appears on the slides 36 and 37 that is not identified as one of the other gain or loss positions?
Okay. Well, this is an interesting thing, and I think I mentioned to you that this software has, well, maybe I didn't mention it. I think I was talking with the auditors earlier today about this. The software was initially developed by a British firm, which was acquired by HWA International in Memphis. And they have some quirky things, including on this statement, which you've identified with this change in market value. The income statement and balance sheet are peer accounting. Exactly what happens in your account. This statement, for whatever reason, how they programmed this, is they take the shares times the latest market price, and they say that's the market value, and when I run this statement, That's exactly what I'm going to show. So you'll see on this page 36, the ending balance as of February 28th is identical to the asset detail. But you'll see that the beginning value and the withdrawals, net distribution, and investment change, if you added those together, they'd be different by this $1.90. So the programmers, much to the chagrin of anybody who's an accountant, they put in this plug factor. And it's generally, it clearly is just a rounding factor by when you take a four-digit market price times a four-digit share value, you're going to end up with some rounding difference. And that's what that represents. Does that make, does that help identify that? The other one, if on the statements, when you go into your thing, the actual realized and unrealized gain shows up on the income statement. So if you go back to slide 33, you'll notice that under income, it's investment income, realized gain loss, unrealized gain loss. Keep in mind that this doesn't necessarily mean what you have incurred on your original investment in the common endowment. This represents your share of the change in the overall common pool for that particular time period.
Thank you, Phil.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Anything else?
Okay. Phil, thanks a lot. I really appreciate that presentation. And to anybody out there who might have a question that they didn't get to ask, feel free to give us a call here at UA. You can talk to Phil. You can talk to me. You can talk to Susan Helbert. We're all here to help you. So that was a longer call than usual, but I think it was really good to get this briefing from Phil about the new system, which I'm very excited about because I think it adds a lot of utility and functionality for our congregations. I think it's a real step up. So thanks, everybody, and we will talk to you next quarter. Thanks a lot. Bye.